Sick and tired of hearing things from uptight, short-sighted, narrow-minded hypocrites. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth. I've had enough of reading things by neurotic, psychotic, pig-headed politicians. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Today, I'll begin the show with some 9/11 news updates, and then you'll hear a variety of audio clips about the drills, war games, and exercises that happened prior to and on 9/11, and how they also coincidentally occurred at other events, such as the 7/7 bombings in London in 2005, and the attempted assassination of Ronald Reagan, and the Oklahoma City bombings, and more. So first, let's start with the updates. Italian Supreme Court President Fernando Imposimato calls for a new 9/11 investigation at the International Criminal Court. That is just wonderful news. That would be great. I'm not holding my breath on that because I think the International Criminal Court has probably been compromised a bit, but it's a powerful person making that request, so it gives me some hope. If you want to read that full article about that or learn more about it, you can go to the website 911blogger.com. And more good news on the 9/11 front. There was an international conference held in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia, from November 19th to the 21st of this year at the Putra World Trade Center in Kuala Lumpur. It was called 9/11 Revisited, Seeking the Truth. And some of the speakers there were Cynthia McKinney, a former U.S. Congresswoman, James Corbett of the Corbett Report, Richard Gage, founder of the Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth website and organization, Michelle Chusadovsky, the founder of globalresearch.ca, the Canadian website that I personally love, and he's a professor of economics at the University of Ottawa. Then there was Graham McQueen, who I've had on the show before. He's an author and one of the organizers of the Toronto hearings last year. Then Giulietta Chiesa, former member of the European Parliament, who is known to have said that everyone in the intelligence communities around the world know that it was the Mossad and the CIA that did 9/11. Then there was Dr. Chandra Musafar, president of the International Movement for a Just World. Then Professor Gurdial Sin Nijjar, chairman, faculty of law at the University of Malaya, and Tan Sri Norian Mai, chairman of the Perdana Global Peace Foundation. And it's this organization that was responsible for putting on this conference. And their website is perdanaforpeace.org. And Perdana is P-E-R-D-A-N-A, the digit four, so perdanaforpeace.org. And there was a professor from Innsbruck, Austria there, somebody from Mumbai, India, and their keynote speaker was someone from Malaysia called Yablug Tan Sri Azumi Mohammed. The conference was divided up into three parts, and they are what really happened on 9/11, and then the fear factor, and then the third and last part was post-9/11 global consequences. So if they release the video footage from the conference, I will definitely be sharing it with you in the future. And then there's even more good news. 9/11 researcher Kevin Ryan is writing a book, and it's called Another 19. And you can go to the website another19.org, and you can read about the 19 people that he's writing about and the people who actually may have had something to do with pulling off 9/11. And I'm just going to read you their names. So the Another 19 are Donald Rumsfeld, Dick Cheney, Frank Carlucci, Richard Armitage, Wirt Dexter Walker III, Barry McDaniel, Dwayne Andrews, Bernard Carrick, L. Paul Bremer III, Brian Michael Jenkins, Richard Clark, Ralph Eberhardt, Richard Pearl, Paul Wolfowitz, Peter Jansen, Porter Goss, Michael Canavan, Benedict Sliney, George Tenet, Louis Free, and Carl Truscott. And these people are all people who were involved in the Bush administration in some way, or people who worked for the FAA or the security companies around the trade centers, or some of the businesses that were in the trade centers are involved in this. So it's a very interesting read. You can go there. He's already got things written about all of them. So phenomenal work there by Kevin Ryan. And now more good 9/11 news. There are currently 1,746 architects and engineers staking their reputations, putting their reputations on the line, stating that the official story of 9/11 is not true and calling for a new investigation. And you can check them out at the Architects and Engineers website, which is ae911truth.org. And I'm told that they have another 50 architects and engineers waiting to be put up on the list. They just have to all be vetted, and it takes some time. So we're close up to 1,800 now, which is really great. And if you are an architect or an engineer or a student of either of those fields, you can sign up there and make that number go even higher. And anybody can sign up there. They have another list where they have over 15,000 regular citizens who have signed up calling for a new investigation. So if you want to go there and sign that petition, I highly recommend it. And there is a little bit of sort of bad news here. I interviewed back in January of last year Howard Cohen, who was in the process of producing or trying to produce a movie on 9/11 and going to have star in it quite a few Hollywood movie stars who support 9/11 truth, and there are quite a few of them. So the name got changed, and the movie was called September Morn. And the company that he was working with to produce it, apparently there was some fraudulent activity that he recently got wind of. So right now the movie deal is off. I talked to him on the phone the other day, and he is working on some new plan. And he told me to call him back in 2 weeks. We'll do an interview, and he'll have more information about where the movie's going from here. And he's hopeful that he can still get it off the ground. So hopefully that'll happen. And again, the movie's called September Morn. If you want more information on that, you can go to the website actorsandartistsfor911truth.org. And on a local note, friends have been telling me about some graffiti on the 9184 overpass in Hartford, where someone has written 9/11 truth. And no, it wasn't me. I just can't figure out how they got up there to do that. So you might see that as you're driving on 84 East. You can see it clearly. And also on a local note, a fellow 9/11 truther from Connecticut wrote a song called Building 7, which I'm going to share with you in a few minutes. It was written by Carl Seeger Henry and Mark Saunders. Carl sings and Mark plays the guitar and the mandolin and then joins in the end with Carl in the song. And Gary J. Fox Jr. plays the bass. Gary has a cable access TV show in Middletown called 9/11 Illumination. And he's also been on my show a few times. He's a great musician. So here's their song. This is the first time it's been aired publicly. So here goes. It's called Building 7 with Carl Seeger Henry, Mark Saunders, and Gary J. Fox Jr.
Building 7, the smoking gun. It tells the truth about what was done to me and you and to the world. It tells the truth. It tells it true. 9/11, Building 7. Oh, 9/11, Building 7. At the World Trade Center, three buildings came down, hit by two planes, panic all around. But Building 7 had barely a scratch, not hit by plane, yet it still collapsed. And office fires were blamed for that. Building 7, the smoking gun. It tells the truth about what was done to me and you and to the world. It tells the truth. Building 7. Oh, 9/11, Building 7. The first responders saw molten steel. They heard explosions, for they were real. And we all watched a scene surreal. Those buildings fell with roaring blast, a demolition controlled and fast. Building 7, the smoking gun. It tells the truth about what was done to me and you and to the world. It tells the truth. It tells the truth. 9/11, Building 7. Oh, 9/11, Building 7. We want the truth. What's the real cause? So many questions, it gives one pause. The official story, so full of flaws. Our leaders command us to just move on. We're here to tell you, we won't move on. We're here to tell you, we won't move on. We're here to tell you, we won't move on. Cause Building 7's the smoking gun. We see the truth about what was done to me and you and to the world. It tells the truth. It tells the truth. 9/11, Building 7. Oh, 9/11, Building 7. Oh, 9/11, Building 7. 9/11, Building 7.
So there you have it, Building 7, a great song written by Carl Seeger Henry and Mark Saunders with Gary J. Fox Jr. on bass. I like that line, we're here to tell you, we won't move on. And I agree with that. I think we can't move on until we have the truth because the consequences of 9/11 are so great. So now let's switch gears here and take a look at the war games, drills, and exercises prior to and on 9/11 and, coincidentally, on other false flag events. Prior to and on 9/11, the government was conducting war games, drills, of nearly exactly what happened on 9/11. Here's an audio clip from the movie Loose Change. It starts out with Congressman Dennis Kucinich.
The Central Intelligence Agency warned the president in daily briefings of unprecedented indications that a major al-Qaeda attack was going to happen against the United States.
It was so well known that the United States had done several drills with this exact scenario prior to 9/11.
We're going to take a closer look tonight at another example of where, despite the conventional wisdom, there were people in the United States who actually were preparing to defend against the kind of attacks which occurred here on 9/11. The North American Aerospace Defense Command, NORAD for short, has been defending the skies over the U.S. and Canada for almost 50 years, 46 to be precise. USA Today reports that in the 2 years before the attacks on September the 11th, NORAD conducted exercises using hijacked airliners as weapons. And one target was the World Trade Center. Here's ABC's Brian Ross.
President Bush has said again and again that no one could have imagined what Osama bin Laden ordered for September 11th.
We knew he hated us. But there was nobody in our government, at least, and I don't think the prior government, that could envision flying airplanes into buildings on such a massive scale.
But that turns out not to be true. U.S. military planners did envision and practice those very scenarios. As reported by USA Today, the North American Aerospace Defense Command, NORAD, conducted exercises with fighter jets, simulating hijacked planes flown into the World Trade Center in the 2 years before the attacks. Pentagon planners also envisioned the attack on the Pentagon 5 months before it happened.
One of these drills was run on June 1st and 2nd of 2001. Amalgam Virgo was an exercise where multiple attack scenarios would be occurring simultaneously, including attacks from cruise missiles, unmanned aerial vehicles, and hijacked aircraft. The scenario also envisioned a hijacker taking control of a commercial aircraft and slamming it into the nation's capital, the exercises would constantly be monitored by military satellites and planes. Osama bin Laden was the poster boy for this plot, appearing on the cover.
Isn't it a fact, sir, that prior to September 11, 2001, NORAD had already in the works plans to simulate in an exercise a simultaneous hijacking of two planes in the United States?
Colonel Scott, do you have any data on that? I'm not aware of that, sir. I was not present at the time.
That was Operation Amalgam Virgo.
Yes, sir.
So what did happen on 9/11? The truth is, there was a lot more going on that day than we are being told. There were several war games and exercises being run simultaneously involving multiple government agencies. John Fulton and a team from the CIA would be conducting a drill at 8:45 a.m. out of the National Reconnaissance Office in Chantilly, Virginia, in which a plane is crashed into a building. Other drills would literally cripple our defensive and investigative abilities on that morning.
But this very interesting information, Katie, Matt and Tom, from the FBI, they had been operating a massive exercise from their hostage rescue unit. All of their top teams, about 50 personnel, helicopters, equipment, were in Monterey, California for the last 2 days, scheduled to fly back today commercially. So all of those people are out of place. It's fair to say, according to sources that we've talked to here at NBC, that the FBI rescue operations and other FBI operations are really in chaos right now because they can't reach their officials in New York. All of their phone lines are down. And now you've got all of their special experts on this stuck in Monterey, California, trying to get a military flight back because there are no longer commercial flights. So they are seriously out of pocket. And there is a real breakdown of the FBI anti-terror coordination team, which is, of course, the principal team that would lead any effort.
I actually found myself in Montana with 50 state emergency managers, the director of FEMA, his top staff at the National Emergency Management Association conference. Number of emergency managers from New York State, from Pennsylvania, from Virginia, Maryland, the district, most of New England, made the flight on a C-130 last night. It was one of the only flights across the country, a military aircraft.
Northern Vigilance would redirect fighter jets out of the northeastern sector to patrol Canada and Alaska. Vigilant Guardian and Vigilant Warrior were exercises involving hijacked aircraft that would go in and out of radar. These would appear real to those involved.
We fought many phantoms that day. We got many aircraft calls inbound that morning that turned out to be phantoms.
During that time frame, we had multiple aircraft called hijacked all over the country.
These exercises would not cease until after United 93 was brought down and the attacks were over.
And now here's author Michael Rupert in a 2004 interview, just before his book Crossing the Rubicon came out, talking with Canadian journalist Barry Zwicker about the drills on 9/11.
And Northern Alaska in a Cold War hijack exercise. There was another drill, Vigilant Guardian, which was a hijack exercise, a command post exercise, but it involved the insertion of false radar blips onto radar screens in the Northeast Air Defense Sector. In addition, we have a confirmation, thanks to General Richard Myers, who was acting chairman of the Joint Chiefs, who told Richard Clark, as reported in Clark's book, that there was another exercise, Vigilant Warrior, which was, in fact, according to a NORAD source, a live-fly hijack drill being conducted at the same time. With only 8 available fighter aircraft, and they have to be dispatched in pairs, they were dealing with as many as 22 possible hijacks on the day of 9/11, and they couldn't separate the war game exercises from the actual hijacks.
But this was done deliberately, though.
Apparently so, and I will be saying that in my forthcoming book, Crossing the Rubicon, 9/11 and the Decline of American Empire at the End of the Age of Oil. We have done an extensive investigation on that to show that these war game exercises were apparently very well planned by someone who I will show, I believe, was Dick Cheney in the United States government to deliberately confuse FAA, NORAD, and U.S. Air Force fighter response to fulfill a prophecy that another man had once said, let one happen and stop the rest.
On that very point, we have a recording.
All right, Boston Center, TMU, we have a problem here. We have a hijacked aircraft headed towards New York. We need someone to scramble some F-16s or something up there to help us out.
This
is this real world or exercise?
No, this is not an exercise manifest.
Now, the 9/11 Commission didn't mention the war games, is that right?
No, in their final report they did mention, I think in one paragraph, Vigilant Guardian, but the response given by NORAD Commanding General Ralph Eberhardt and other Air Force spokespeople was absolutely nonsensical, and it made no mention of any of the other war game exercises. Eberhardt's position was, in fact, which is a very ludicrous position, that the Vigilant Guardian exercise, leaving aside the others, actually helped speed response on 9/11. That is absolutely not the case.
How does this relate to the 9/11 Commission report, which says that planes had gone in the wrong directions?
Well, that's a separate issue, and that remains to be clarified. But what I will be disclosing in my book, in effect, is that there were two simultaneously operating command and control systems functioning on the day of 9/11, and at some times they were issuing conflicting orders. We do not have a clear explanation for why fighters from Andrews Air Force Base were sent out over the sea first and couldn't turn around, because the 9/11 Commission seemed to change all the evidence just arbitrarily right before it issued its final report. So we don't have a clear explanation, but certainly there was this all consistent with a motive that said, make sure that the fighters don't get to any place in time to stop the three critical attacks on the World Trade Center and the Pentagon.
And now here's radio show host Alex Jones discussing the military exercises on 9/11 and on other events.
One of the chief tools used by governments as a smokescreen is staging exercises or drills at the exact same time and exact same places as real events. When the Oklahoma City Federal Building was bombed, the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms was staging an anti-terror drill with their bomb squad on the morning of April 19, 1995, at the same time that the real event took place. On the morning of September 11, 2001, the Pentagon was running five separate drills, two of the drills targeting the exact same targets at the exact same time. That caused NORAD to stand down, believing it was just a drill. And London was no different. It's important to note that those taking part in the drills need not know that they're part of a larger operation. In fact, it's better for the conspirators that they not be informed. One of the chief reasons this is done is so that if any of the operatives carrying out the attack are caught by other elements of the government, they can simply claim that they were taking part in a drill or an exercise. NSA, Infopol 9, and Echelon-type systems that are scanning for terrorist chatter will be fooled into believing they've simply picked up part of an exercise. On the morning of 7/7 in London, there was a simultaneous exercise targeting the exact same trains, the exact same bus, at the exact same locations, at the very same time.
What we're supposed to believe is some kind of coincidence. There was also an anti-terrorist drill going on 7/7. And again, just like 9/11, they were talking about attacks on the same targets, the same kind of tube stations, and exactly the same time as the actual attack happened.
We learned of the drills of 7/7 on 7/7 from Peter Power, the head of Visor Consultants, a crisis management firm based in London. Mr. Power was the former spokesperson for Scotland Yard. Mr. Power told National British Television, ITN News, about the drills.
Today we were running an exercise for a company, bearing in mind I'm now in the private sector, and we sat everybody down in the city, 1,000 people involved in the whole organisation, but the crisis team, and the most peculiar thing was we based our scenario on the simultaneous attacks on the Underground and Mainline station. So we had to suddenly switch an exercise from fictional to real. And one of the first things is, get that bureau number, when you have a list of people missing, tell them. And
so
it took a long time.
Just to get this right, you were actually working today on an exercise that envisioned virtually this scenario?
Almost precisely. I was up until 2 o'clock this morning because it's our job, my own company, Visor Consultants. We specialise in helping people to get their crisis management response. How do you jump from slow time thinking to quick time doing? And we chose a scenario with their assistance which is based on a terrorist attack, because they're very close to a property occupied by Jewish businessmen. They're in the city, and there are more American banks in the city than there are in the whole of New York. A logical thing to do. And
how extraordinary today must feel for you as it unfolds.
He repeated himself to BBC Radio 5.
The thing that concerns me is that what are we doing for the thousands of men and women actually who are in London working? And I say that because at 9:30 this morning we were actually running an exercise for over a company of 1,000 people in London based on simultaneous bombs going off precisely at the railway stations that happened this morning. So I still have the hairs on the back of my neck standing upright.
To get this quite straight, you were running an exercise to see how you would cope with this, and it happened while you were running the exercise.
Precisely. And it was about 9:30 this morning. We'd planned this for a company, and for obvious reasons I don't want to reveal their name, but they're listening and they'll know it. And we had a room full of crisis managers for the first time they met. And so within 5 minutes we made a pretty rapid decision, this is the real one. And so we went through the correct drills of activating crisis management procedures to jump from slow time to quick time thinking, yeah, and so on.
If we use a standard actuary employed by major insurance companies to calculate the probability of these events coinciding in a 10-year mean, we learn that the probability of this happening is greater than 1 in 300 fretagillion. To put that in perspective, that's a number with 41 zeros behind it. That is trillions and trillions and trillions and trillions and still more trillions times greater than all the grains of sand in all the world. To put that number in perspective, it has 41 zeros. Scientists using supercomputers have estimated that the Earth has over 7 quintillion grains of sand. A quintillion has 18 zeros.
And again, that was radio show host Alex Jones. There were quite a few similarities between 9/11 and the 7/7 2005 bombings in London. There were 4 incidents in each of them, with a 75% success rate and 25% no. Think of the plane in Shanksville. There were pre-event drills, and miraculously, the perpetrators' IDs survived the attacks. There were drills on the day itself. There were supposedly surprise attacks. There was pre-event surveillance of the perpetrators. There were supposedly missed warnings about the attacks. There were supposed intelligence failures. And interestingly, Bush was in the U.S. during 9/11, and Bush was also in the U.K. on 7/7. Rudy Giuliani was in New York on 9/11, and he was also in London on 7/7. The crimes were solved quickly. Public inquiry was blocked. Families asked for inquiries, and then the inquiry sidelined the families. And I got that information from YouTube from a video called 9/11 and 7/7 Modus Operandi. So if you want to see that yourself, you can go there. So one good clue that an event is a false flag operation is if there are war games or drills going on at the same time involving the exact same or similar scenario. This concludes this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Thanks for listening.